Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, August 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's that time again. It's time to discuss birds with our friend Rich Guthrie, who is here to answer all your questions about birds. Here's a bird fact. Did you know that birds are direct descendants of the dinosaurs? Did you know that?
Sure.
Well, actually,
they're not direct descendants. They are New Age dinosaurs.
Okay. Well, it was kind of a rhetorical question.
Well, no, it's factual now. We're believing it.
Running out of time here.
That's a one-minute billboard. Oh, I'm sorry.
Rich Guthrie's here, and we're off to a flying start. It's 800-348-2551. It's Birds with Rich Guthrie. 800-348-2551. It's infotainment at its best, or something. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. Our guest today is a longtime birder, retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, outdoor guide and tour leader, past regional editor of American Birds, the Christmas Bird Count, and eBird reviewer for 18 eastern New York counties. He's a three-time Tony Award winner. Rich Guthrie is back with us today. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, always an expert guest, always a popular one. Only a couple of lines open now. If you have any hope of getting through, it's a good time to call. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org, or tweet us at @WAMCVoxPop. Rich Guthrie, welcome back to the show, old boy.
Hey, all right. Good to be here.
Got your new bio down.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So is that a Tony? Is that with an I or a Tony with a Y?
Oh, Tony, you, for your stage work, right? I saw you in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest years ago.
I was somewhere in there.
Yeah. It's very nice.
Recurring theme.
Maybe you didn't win some Tonys. I'll have to check that later on with our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. So before we get to the calls, and there are a lot of them, mm-hmm. anything new that you would like to discuss?
Here we are. The midst of summer, the doldrums.
Yes.
The dog days. And for the bird world, it's actually quiet time.
They've gone already.
No. They're out there fattening themselves up and changing their uniforms.
What?
Yeah.
Molting season?
Nesting season is over, and all the young are out there begging for food or having been well fed and just waiting their turn to leave. And the adults are changing are molting. They're going through their annual molt. And it's a tough time in that respect. So, the songs are muted, if at all. And except for the babies calling for more food. And other than that, they're just getting ready for the stage left.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
You know what I've been seeing a lot of in our neighborhood and in my yard?
What's that?
Rabbits.
Wabbits.
A lot of rabbits.
Wabbits.
Not strictly speaking birds, but I thought I'd bring it up. Let's go to the phones. Richard in Rhineland. Richard, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, Richard.
Hi, it's Vineland.
Oh, it says Rhineland.
Not Rhineland.
All right, fine. You're on anyway, wherever you are.
Okay. Hey, listen, I was out at the Forsyth Refuge a while back and down here in South Jersey, and I came across a bird in distress. It was a gull, mm-hmm. and he was hanging upside down from a little shrub. So I pulled over, and I got out and violated like 6 rules of the refuge, and I went down to see what his problem was, and he was hooked in a little shrub, and he had a mussel that had clamped hard onto his foot, and that's what was caught.
Yikes.
So I extricated him, and he was pretty exhausted by then, but I wondered what to do next, and I decided, I looked closely at him. I didn't have a hammer to break the mussel. What I did was, it was only barely holding on by one little joint of his toe, so I simply ripped it off.
Yeah,
and then I let him go, and he just sat there. He was quite exhausted. And I'm just wondering what your take on that is, whether you're in the camp of you just let nature take its ugly course, or should I have intervened with the bird and tried to help it out?
That's
like
a good
I did.
Question.
Always a tough call. And from your description, what you did, despite all the rules and regulations, attaboy.
Oh, really?
I'm with you. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
give
good.
Him a chance.
Thanks.
And there are times when you should. There are times when you probably shouldn't. And there are times when you definitely shouldn't. And it's all a question of judgment at the time, at the moment, and it's situational awareness. You got to look around and see what's going on, and the consequences, evaluation, triage your way through it.
Well, no, it's very tough to do on the spur of the moment and in the heat
of
absolutely,
the
absolutely. And you go away. Sometimes you react and you intervene. You don't know, as you, Richard, don't know what the total outcome was. And sometimes you move on and then wonder if only or what if, and, you know, the angst thereafter. So, as I say, it's a tough call. I've made it many times myself, plus or minus. But bottom line, Richard, I thank you for doing that.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Rich. Yes. I appreciate your show, too. Thanks a lot for doing it.
Thank you very much for being here. All right, Rich, so far so good. You're batting 1,000, but we've only had one call. Let's go to Dottie in Warwick. Dottie, you're on.
Hi, Ray. This is Dottie. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
I'm here, too.
I have a question for you. I have a farm in Warwick, and we've got, when I'm out taking care of the animals, doing chores and stuff in the morning and in the afternoon, I hear a red-tailed hawk, and he's calling, or she is just calling and calling and calling for just seems to be hours. And it doesn't matter what time of day. I've heard him in the mornings. I've heard him in the afternoons, even in the evenings sometimes. And all this bird does is call and flies around and just calls. So I don't know. What is he doing? I'm just kind of curious.
Maybe. Now, I don't know how long has this been going on.
2 weeks.
Sometimes
it's like, will you shut up already?
All right. And you're not the only one saying
just
that.
All the time. So a friend of mine thought that maybe it's a female and they're young in the area, and she's calling to the young. Another person suggested it's a male looking for a mate. But I thought, well, seeing how you're on the show, I thought I'd ask.
Great question.
Yeah, there you go. And my take is that it is a baby.
Oh, okay.
Feed me.
Is mommy not around?
Mommy's around there someplace, but just never satisfied. Not enough rabbits down there.
Typical
in Warwick.
Kids.
Oh, we've got tons of rabbits. It's just like graveyard.
Yeah, okay.
We got some big
We've got piles of them.
Okay, well, he should be well fed, but that's my take on it. He's just looking for more food and saying, here I am, I'm hungry. And it may be more than one, three out of the same nest, and they're all taking turns.
Oh, so there's multiple ones, and that's why it seems to be continuous.
Right.
And they all sound the same. What do they sound like,
Rich? The bump.
Actually, you know what they sound like? You hear it on the television quite often. They're the background sound when you see an eagle fly.
Really?
Yeah. They plug in the sound of a red-tailed hawk.
Wow.
It's a little bogus.
Are the eagles not attractive to listen to?
No, they're not. They don't sound eagle-ish. The red-tail sounds real eagle.
The eagle just sounds like a high-pitched scream.
Yeah,
and it's funny because I know it's silly, but when I have to move my chickens and they're not, they want to come near me and because they think I have food and I want them to go in the house and so I can shut the pop hole, I'll put YouTube on and I'll put Red Tail Hawk and they'll hear that and they'll run.
Really, there you go.
Kind of mean, but it works.
Hey,
so.
It works, and besides, it heightens their awareness so that
the real thing is I don't want them to be eaten, and so I'm always constantly, I keep chewing them in when I hear the hawks flying around.
Stick
stuff,
to the rabbit, Red Tail.
Yeah, exactly. Get a rabbit instead, not my bird.
Well,
anyway, Rich, thanks so much. Thank you, Ray.
Thanks, Dottie.
Have a wonderful afternoon.
We appreciate the call very much. 800-348-2551. One line open at the moment. Let's go over to Andy in Kingston. Andy, you're on with the wonderful Rich Guthrie.
Hi. I was down at the Hudson River yesterday, and I saw white egret.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it for a while because it was unusual to see one of those down there. And I looked away for about 30 seconds to follow where my dog was going. And when I looked back, the egret was still standing there in the water where he had been before, but he was now a brown egret. Is that possible?
What?
No. Well, what is possible is that they just traded partners. There was a different egret. The likelihood of it being, it's not the same bird. But first of all, let's go back a minute. The great egret, that beautiful, tall, white, elegant-looking bird that stands very aloof in the shallow waters of the edge of the pond at the corner of the marsh. Wonderful birds. And down in Kingston, there happens to be a whole bunch of them that have showed up this year at a place called the Sopus Flats, just south of Kingston.
Right, that's where I was.
Well, there are dozens of them there as we speak. My friends in the John Burroughs Natural History Society are regularly reporting them on eBird and sharing the news with all the world by that venue. Now,
where was this?
What has happened?
Where was this? The William S. Burroughs? What is it?
Aesopus. Aesopus Meadows down there on the Hudson
the
River.
The Burroughs, what is it called?
What?
The reserve?
Aesopus Meadows.
Okay.
Aesopus Meadows or Aesopus Flats.
I see.
And it's on the Hudson River on the west side, just south of Kingston.
Okay.
And there are dozens of great egrets there, as well as great blue herons and maybe some night herons there and about. So my suspicion is that you saw a great egret, and then you looked away, and next showed up was a great blue heron.
So one took off and the other one landed.
That's my guess.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you, Andy.
This one came in. This will be a toughie before break here.
Oh, tough one.
This is an email, and I'm not sure how we're going to address this. This is from Amy.
You're in charge.
Sent from her iPhone, who writes, I've heard a bird, usually in the evening, 6:30 to 7:30, that had what was for me a very unusual call. Didn't see the bird. It sounded like a special effects type of sound, like the bird was in some sort of chamber.
Ah.
Any ideas? Haven't heard it lately. Heard it in late June, early July. That's
here
from Amy.
Here we go.
Okay, I love this.
A little weak there.
Yeah, it was weak.
Another sip of coffee.
All right, do it again. Okay, what?
Whistle is weak. What we're listening to is a veery.
A veery?
V-E-E-R-Y. V as in Victor.
Why would it sound like it was in some sort of a chamber?
Because they actually, it's three sounds coming out at once. They have the ability. It's a member of the thrush family, the beautiful songsters. And they have the ability to produce multiple sounds harmonically at the same time.
Really?
And so you're hearing what sounds like maybe an echo, reverberation, but it's all the same
sound
coming out.
How about that? So you knew that right away?
Oh, sure, because it's a wonderful description. I thank you for that. And it has this downward spiral, and it sounds like it's whistling through a rain barrel.
Huh.
Nice.
So it comes in with its own effects plugin. Amazing.
It's there. Nature's wonderful.
It is very.
It's a bird. It's a plain brown bird of the wet woods, the bottomlands, typically. But, you know, they can show up in a backyard almost anywhere.
Very interesting indeed. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551. Rich, also a member of the Thrush family. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the 1850 House Inn and Tavern, featuring Deck 435, waterfront dining in the center of the Hudson Valley, where the mountains meet the Catskills, the1850house.com. Pelham Auto Service, at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972, pelhamauto.com. The Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. And Northeast Solar in Hatfield, Massachusetts, helping Pioneer Valley residents live more sustainably with solar power for home, business, or farm. Keep solar local, northeast-solar.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. And, Rich, we have a ton of calls, but I know you have some events you want to alert us to.
The club's out there. Now it's a good time to get out in the field, join other people, and enjoy the birds as with a group. And
yeah.
Let me just mention a few that are coming up. First of all, the Alan DeVoe Bird Club over in Chatham, Columbia County, New York. It will be going to Mud Creek down
Mud
in the
Creek.
Town of Ghent.
All right.
All right. Check their website. It's on the 14th, August 14th.
Okay.
Their website, adbc.org.
What do you mean probably?
Probably.
Right down the website before the show, Rich.
Alan DeVoe Bird Club. Go
all
for
right,
them.
Fine.
And then we have, now this one is fun. The Hudson Mohawk Bird Club is doing their annual Nighthawk Watch. Evening at the Albany Pine Bush Preserve. That's on the 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th, and 26th. Each evening at 6 p.m., bring a lawn chair, go to the visitor center at the Albany Pine Bush, and enjoy. You'll see nighthawks going overhead. And wonderful narration as people will interpret what's going on. It's not only nighthawks, but other birds that show up as well.
So tell us about nighthawks really quickly here.
Nighthawks are not a hawk. They're related to the whippoorwill. Mm-hmm. And I'm concerned. They're one of my favorite birds, but they're in serious decline. We don't know why. But and so we'll go years without, we'll go for a year without seeing any. And now's your chance as they're migrating from further away, passing over the area in August.
Okay.
So then the Mearns Bird Club down in Orange County, New York, mm-hmm. will be going to the Bashakill on the 27th. And check their website, Mearns Bird Club.
Dot anything?
Dot something.
Okay, great, great.
And September 3rd, they'll be going to the Black Dirt District.
The Black Dirt. The so Black we're going Dirt. To the Mud Creek, and we're also going to the Black Dirt.
Hey, we got more.
This sounds like Deliverance.
The Waterman Bird Club
okay.
will be going to Deep Hollow. Deep on the 13th of August.
All right, sir.
Check with the Ralph T. Waterman, RTWBC. I got to read my
All
notes
right,
here.
Guthrie, write down the website.
I got to write neatly.
All right, this is ridiculous.
And then one more.
All right.
One more. And that is on the 21st, the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club will be going to Cohoes Flats. And the Cohoes Flats are right in the Albany area, right up there in, by Cohoes, New York.
Sure.
Right,
yeah.
Hence the name.
Yep.
And there they'll be looking for shorebirds, sandpipers, plovers, and whatever rare gulls might
show
terrific.
Up. Oh, terrific. And this is the time for that?
Now's the time, yeah. The shorebirds are migrating through. August is their time of year because they got a long way to go. They got to go all the way to southern South America to spend the winter. So they're hoofing it now.
So we just got back from our yearly summer vacation up in Maine, and we we're on the beach 10 days in
on
a row.
Coast,
we see a lot of nice birds.
Well, there are.
Although I'm not a big fan of the seagulls.
Say that again?
I'm not a big fan of the seagulls.
Well, I am.
I call them... I annoy the children by calling them winged rats of the deep.
Well, they're actually Jonathan Livingston babies.
Okay, fine. This one came in via email, and then we'll get back to the phones. This is from Jody in Lee, Mass. Thought I'd let you know for the next year that a friend of mine gave me some alpaca fiber, which I fastened to my hummingbird feeder, Shepherd's Crook. And the chickadees and tufted titmice just loved it. If anyone has alpaca friends, consider this option. P.S. Still waiting for Rich to attempt the red-winged blackbird call.
Well,
the gauntlet is thrown.
The red-winged blackbird.
Yeah.
Beautiful bird, well named. It's a blackbird with a nice red patch on the wing.
Yeah.
Their song sounds like they're bilingual. They speak Italian and English. They say Wednesday in Italian. Mercoledì, Mercoledì, Mercoledì.
Okay.
That's their song. In English, they say conquerì, conquerì.
What does that mean in English?
It means conqueree. It means Bacola D in
English.
You've
been conquered? You're the conqueree?
No, conqueree. It's their song.
All right, fine. Let's go to Emily in Marlboro. Emily, you're on with the dynamic Rich Guthrie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have a question, and then I want to tell you something. But the question is I take care of cats,
okay.
And then I notice at night I have a lot of owls come, and they sit on the low branches, and they just peer down. And, you know, I've shined flashlights on them and made noise, and they don't sort of go away fast enough. And I was wondering if you know if owls have a meal interest in a cat, and or if they could actually physically pick up a cat and carry it away. I can't imagine they could do that, but I don't know.
It's a good question.
Save your cats. Bring them indoors.
Oh, they can be taken away by owls?
Save your cats. Bring them indoors, and you'll be doing the birds a favor, too. And,
so you didn't answer the question.
Yeah, I know. Well, the answer is yes, and I it's poetic justice. It's what happens. It's a turnaround thing. The
Emily.
Cats go after the birds, and the birds will go after the cats.
Rich doesn't like cats, Emily.
Outdoors. I love cats.
Doesn't like
cats. Cats are my favorite creatures.
Really?
Indoors.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm with you,
okay,
though,
no,
Emily.
Nope.
I like cats.
Okay. So thank you for that. And the other thing real quick is that in the recent August issue of the National Geographic, they have a story and photos of a man, a photographer that traveled around the world taking pictures of birds when they get caught in mist nets.
Uh-huh.
And I guess evidently some wildlife research centers capture birds in mist nets, I guess, to study them. So they're actually beautiful photos. But my question to you is, what happens to these birds that get caught in these nets?
They get banded, released, and on their way. And as a result, we learn a lot from that whole effort. It's a lot of work, and the birds are tagged, released, and studied as part of their life cycle.
There you go.
Okay.
Emily.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Welcome.
So interesting about owls. Owls are strong enough to pick up.
The great horned owl is a powerful, powerful machine.
Very interesting.
Oh, he's huge and tough.
We saw one time we were out years ago playing ball out in the front lawn with kids in the neighborhood, and owl came up from a house across the street and it had a rabbit in its in its whatever talons or beak or whatever. And but I mean they're big.
They are big. They're tough, and they do a good job of what they do.
And they're not always nocturnal, right?
The great horned owl is dusk. Oh yeah, dusk is when they do come out, and they're probably hungry at dusk, but they hunt through the night. And during the day, they just rest and relax and try to stay out of sight.
All right, let's go back to the phones and over to Lori in Rensselaer. Fonda. Lori, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm trying to identify a bird in my backyard. It's a very shy bird. It's small in stature, thin body type. The distinguishing thing is it's the most beautiful teal blue, teal green. It's the most unusual color, but I can't find it in any of my bird books.
How big?
I would say small, comparable to maybe a sparrow.
Okay. We're going to go with indigo bunting.
Okay. Now, he's looking in his Sibley bird book. Well, I'm going to vamp here for a moment. Lori, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll try to be fast.
All right. So you think it'll be an indigo bunting?
Indigo bunting.
Well, let's give it a shot.
A delightful little blue bird.
Look at that. It doesn't look teal to me, though. I gotta be honest with you, Rich.
Well, it depends on what kind of teal.
Okay.
Okay? Where the heck did
All right. So how's the weather in Fonda today, Lori?
Did you get any rain out there?
It's beautiful outside? It's cloudy here. Oh, it's awful.
Oh, no. It's getting better.
Half cloudy.
Okay, well that's good. Nothing wrong. Is the Fonda Speedway still in operation? I haven't been out that way in a while.
It is, and we even have a new small dirt track.
Cool.
Across the river. It's called the Glen Ridge.
Well, Lori, you're our second guest here, but now Rich has finally found the picture, and so Rich, I'll let you take this.
Indigo bunting.
All right, doesn't look teal, Rich.
That's all right. Depends on what kind of teal.
All right, Lori. So he says indigo bunting. Does that satisfy you?
It satisfies me enough that I'm going to go on to Google Images and see if I can find something that looks familiar.
Okay, now if he's wrong, will you call us next time and yell at him?
Well, I might not yell at him, but
I'm not worried, Lori. We're good. We're a team.
All right. Lori, it's been fun chatting with you. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, folks.
Bye-bye.
800-348-2551. The exciting Rich Guthrie is here. Johnny and Tilson. Johnny, you're on.
Hey.
Howdy.
I got a comment and a question.
All right.
The comment was about I was recently down on Long Island where I grew up to go boating with a friend, and we had a problem with the boat, and we had to go to Amityville. And anyway, as the mechanic was looking at the boat, at the motor, these two green parrots flew by, and I was like, I grew up there, but I had never seen parrots before. And then, and he pointed, they're nesting up, and they had these wooden nests up on the electrical poles.
You're absolutely right. And what you were looking at was what's called a monk parakeet. And and for the benefit of Ray and those watching on the
WAMC.org, where you can watch this travesty.
WAMC.org, yes. As you can be entertained by the next turning of the page.
Entertained.
As we try hard to find the monk parakeet. The monk parakeet is a bird that's native to South America. And it's now found in the in the United States, in many different areas, because it was released under various auspicious reasons, sometimes escape and sometimes released. But in any event, the monk parakeet is a large green. It's in here.
Oh, yeah, look at that. There you go.
There we go. And what's amazing is that they were able, the few birds that were released or escaped were able to survive, procreate, and expand their,
how about that?
Their range.
Amazing.
We had them nesting here in the Albany area not too long ago up in Waterville, New York. But they're regarded in some circles as a nuisance because when they build that wooden stick nest, as you described.
Yeah.
On telephone or electric poles, there is a concern that they might be a fire hazard. So the power companies are not too keen about that. So what they did this year or that year that they nested in Waterville was they had environmental conservation come in, remove the birds and bring them to a rehabilitator where it will be taken care of in perpetuity.
So the birds will be electric, like, you know, flaming parrots flying around?
Don't know their fate, but apparently, and I don't know of any actual instance, but perhaps it's so just cautious concern.
Very interesting.
Where short-circuiting on wet wood might cause ignition and damage to the electrical system.
Now, Johnny, you had a question as well, right?
What? Excuse me?
You had a question as well, right?
Oh, yeah. The question is... And I don't know, there's probably not an answer to it, but I've got a problem with downy woodpeckers, you know, taking over my hummingbird feeder.
Oh, lucky you. Why do you want a solution for?
Yeah, and they're sucking it down, you know, and, I mean, it's almost like every day I'm having to refill it. And, you know, but they're keeping, you know, if I go out there and I shoo them, you know, then the hummingbirds will come. But otherwise, they're just, like, dominating the feeder.
I know what you're saying. I'm being a little bit facetious there. It's unusual that downy woodpeckers will go to a hummingbird feeder, but it happens. Yeah. And this year, it seems to be happening more.
We've
so
We've heard
than,
this on the program.
Yes, and I had a couple of calls at home, one from a delightful lady over in Rensselaer County who called me up at home, and it is awesome. However, you know, if you want to feed the hummingbirds, the downy woodpeckers are kind of like the big hog at the feeder.
Well, if the downy woodpeckers all of a sudden, all of them decide they have a taste for this hummingbird solution.
Sugar water.
Yeah, I mean, then what happens to the hummingbirds?
The hummingbirds will go to the flowers, which, by the way, this being August, I might bring up, now is a good time to plan ahead for fall plantings for next year and beyond. Bird beneficial plantings. Native plants, go to your garden shop, go to a native garden shop such as Catskill Native Nursery, and see what they got. You might find some plants on reduced price right
sure.
now, and go ahead and start planting.
Interesting. You know, we have a lot of flowers that the hummingbirds love, so we mm-hmm. always have hummingbirds. We have plenty of them.
There you go.
Also, interestingly, hummingbird moths.
Right.
But they go to the flowers, too.
Nature is wonderful, isn't it?
It's really incredible.
Yeah.
Let's go over to Susan in Kingston. Susan, you're on.
Hello. I'm having a great day. I hope you are, too.
Thank you. More or less.
You're making it better. Thank you.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first one is a two-part question. The DEC is taking hawk feathers, eagle feathers, and things like that from the Native Americans, even if they have papers from the government saying that they can keep them. Now, I understand some of the reason they're thinking, well, people are hunting them and they're taking the feathers or whatever. And I'm wondering, other than that, why are they doing this?
I don't know. It's first I've heard of it, and it seems to be, I don't know where it's happening or why it's happening or how it's happening.
Right here. Pennsylvania, mostly.
Okay, well, that's not New York DEC then. And that's more a federal program, a Federal Protection Act.
Yeah.
That whole law is administered by the federal government, certainly not by New York State in Pennsylvania. I don't know of any reservation in Pennsylvania where there would be permitted use. So I'm sure there's a lot more facts that are behind the story that I would not have.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, the second question I have, there is a huge bird. It's all kind of brownish. It looks like an eagle. Now, I see it every so often. And mm-hmm. one time I saw it sit down and try to get a squirrel off a tree. Now, I believe it's a golden eagle, not a young bald eagle.
Well, where are you, roughly?
I'm in Kingston. I'm on a wooded area at the end, in the mountain town of Ulster.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of woods here and fields, but every so often I see it.
Well, not likely a golden eagle.
Why?
Well, a couple of reasons. They're not around here, for one thing. They're really not. There are a lot of birds that will look like a golden eagle that are around here. And golden eagles really don't hunt in the woods. Squirrels are not their main prey. And so to all of those pieces put together add up to three negatives that rule against golden eagles. So now the question is, what might it be? Red-tailed hawk comes to mind.
Big for that.
Not a red-tailed hawk.
Okay, well then
I know red-tailed hawks when I see one. There's a lot of those around, but this thing's huge.
Yeah, okay. Well then we'll have to go to the fallback, the immature bald eagle, which is huge, and it is all brown. Okay. It looks like a golden eagle, and they are here. Going after a squirrel is unusual, but two out of three, we'll have to go with that.
But yeah, it's a lawn area, and then it goes right into the forest. Actually, wooded area. It's not forest. It's just wooded area.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep swoop down through the field, the lawn area, and try to get a squirrel off the tree.
Well, again, get a picture. And then,
it's so hard to do.
Yes.
Okay, well, there's your challenge.
Well, that's a good one.
I don't think it's a harrier because harriers are different.
And they wouldn't be going after a squirrel in a tree, that's for sure. Harrier is a what we used to call a marsh hawk.
Yeah.
As the name suggests, they're found out in flat, open areas.
Okay.
So, all right, ball in your court. See if we can nail this down.
And if you find a picture, Rich, what is that email address?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
So it's Richard P.
P as in Peter, Guthrie, GUTHRIE, @gmail.com.
So if somebody sends you a picture, you'll be able to take a look and...
And be as confused.
Have you ever been stumped?
Pictures aren't always that... Pictures are helpful,
yeah,
but they're not always a slam dunk. Bad light, bad angle, bad focus, bad this. But usually, it's the way to get to an answer.
Okay.
And if I don't know, I'll ask others.
Fair enough. Our guest today is the vivacious Rich Guthrie. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Another exciting 20 minutes ahead. I want you to stay right there, get a cool drink. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. The Ashokan Center, where nature inspires, presenting a square and Cajun dance and barbecue under the stars with the Pine Leaf Boys, Jay and Molly, and caller Will Mentor. Saturday, August 13th, AshokanCenter.org. John Lee & Company, offering senior living consolidation and relocation services, including packing and unpacking household items, as well as staging and organization. JohnLeeAuctions.com. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. And Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive media displays, and commercial casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Light, airy, breezy program here. It's Birds with Rich Guthrie, Ray Graff, and 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Rich, it's been a great show.
So far, so good.
Should we do a little more?
Let's go.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Lynn in Greenfield. Lynn, you're on.
Hi. I have a large hummingbird in my yard that associates with a male ruby throat. They sit together inches apart on a tomato cage. And I'm trying to identify the large hummingbird.
Pictures.
I cannot. It's so shy. I can only observe it from inside out the glass door.
Okay.
Anytime it sees me, it takes off. I think it's a female. It has a very pale underside, a green cap and back, and I'm thinking rivoles or blue-throated.
Okay.
I've never seen anything like it. In 23 years of feeding hummingbirds, I've never had a western hummingbird in my yard.
Okay, two things. Number one, where are you?
Greenfield, Mass.
I'm in Orange County,
Greenfield, New York.
Oh, Greenfield, New York.
Okay, then what I'd like you to do, can you email me?
Sure.
Good.
But wait, she doesn't have a picture.
We're gonna work on this. Here's why. A large hummingbird anywhere in the Northeast, anywhere in eastern U.S., north of Texas or Florida, and let's include Texas and Florida,
yeah,
is very, very, very unusual.
Really?
But it does happen.
Yeah. It does happen. How big is this? Big as a football? Big as a turkey?
Like five inches.
Okay.
5 inches.
So okay. Not that big.
So
and,
where,
and you can...
Go ahead.
Observing it next to the ruby throat, the size difference is very obvious.
Yeah. We 50% of us are fully on board with you on that.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm in. I want to know more. And what I'd like to know is if you don't mind emailing me with a little more specifics on that.
Okay.
And we're going to track this down because,
okay,
Ray, this is really good.
You sound excited.
Oh, I am. Jumping out of my seat.
Okay, just calm down.
Yeah, it is exciting. I'm very excited about it.
Well, I'm with you.
All right. I just hope Rich can make it through the show. Just go to the decaf, man.
We're going to, yes.
All right.
We're going to turn off the lights, close the door, and I'll be down there soon.
All right, Lynn, why don't you get that email address one more time from Rich?
Please.
Richard. Please. The name is Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie. That's Guthrie at gmail.com.
So Richard P. Guthrie at Gmail. Lynn, thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551. Wow, such excitement. Let's go to Gary in Scotia. Gary, you're on.
Gary.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We're there.
Yes. Hi. Thank you so much. Rich, my wife and I drop everything we're doing whenever you come on the show.
Well, me too.
We're always afraid that you're going to stop coming on because of Ray's abuse. But,
what do you mean?
I'm with you. Yeah, Gary. We're together.
Oh, no. Hey, a couple of quick questions. First, a comment on the gentleman earlier. This is the first year we also have seen downy woodpeckers on our hummingbird feeders, but they're not dominating so much, but they also are spending a lot of time on our sunflower feeders. Now, we try to usually have suet out, but the blackbirds and blue jays have just been decimating the suet, so I take it the downies are hungry and going after whatever they can get.
A little more resourceful then, yes.
Yes, I guess. Now a question. Noticed this for years, and I think I might know the answer, but we'll see in the sky a lot of times flocks of smaller birds harassing or going after, like, a single crow.
Yep.
And then also we'll see crows doing the same thing to maybe hawks. So it's like smaller birds going after the larger birds, and I was wondering, is it because they're keeping them from their nest, or they're just generally harassing them?
Well, both, actually. Primarily keeping them away from the nest. Nature has this reverse pecking order in the bird world. Little guys go after the big guys. The hummingbird after the robin after the jay, the jay after the hawk, and it goes up the chain. So, and for good reason, you know, the jay wants to eat the small bird's babies or eggs, and the crow wants to eat. So their job is to kind of discourage them from hanging out in the corner.
Okay.
And then it's something that sort of repeats through the year. It's sort of diminished after the nesting season, but every now and then, you know, you get a cantankerous crow that will go after a great blue heron or an eagle.
Yeah. Well, it's always surprising to me because it seems like, for example, a crow going after a hawk.
Yep.
It seems like the hawk could easily just change that course and take the crow right out, but they don't usually do it. They'll fly away. They'll get out of there.
Yeah, the hawk could, and sometimes they do. And that, you know, that's how crows learn.
Yeah. Speaking of crows, and I guess this is a general comment. We've lived here over 20 years, and we just love our birds. You know, we have 4 or 5 hummingbird feeders, and the same with the sunflower. This year, it just seems like we've never seen the bird activity that we're seeing right now. And when the young, especially families, you know, we've had bluebirds this year with their babies and swallows. Unfortunately, house sparrows killed the swallow babies, which just really breaks my heart when those horrible birds. But I mean, we're seeing mourning doves and their babies and the crows and their young and grosbeaks and nuthatches. We've just never seen so many different species of birds with their young, and it's wonderful and fascinating sitting outside watching all
this. That's great.
The crows are especially hilarious. So we've got a pair of crows that had 3 young ones, and they still are hanging around. The young ones are just as large as the parents, and they just follow them around on the ground, opening their mouths, making that god-awful young crow noise, and they're just just the funniest birds. You know, years ago, I'm in my 60s, years ago, you never would see crows, right, in people's backyards. They're out in the farmer's fields and such. But
you're
these
right
guys,
about, you're right about
strut,
that.
The they strut around.
Your crows moved right into the neighborhood, and they're part of my home entertainment system.
They are great birds. Thank you, Gary, for the call. We appreciate it. Bob, no, not Bob. It's Rich Guthrie is our guest. Bob Berman is another show. You want to talk about astronomy? How about the Perseids, eh?
Perseids are coming on.
All right, you know, and we just had Gary on the line saying how many birds they have been seeing. And now we have an email here from B Spa. Oh, no, Scott, I'm sorry, in B Spa. Who says, we've not had nearly as many hummingbirds this year. Any reason?
No.
I would say they just move around. We've
had
a lot of
them. Yeah, they just move around. Ray, you're catching on.
All right. Well, I'm not able to do the show by myself, so we'll have you back next month as well. Susan in Niskayuna. Susan, you're on. No, I'm sorry. This is Bob in somewhere. No, this is nobody. Press the darn button. Bob,
I take it back.
Where are you calling from?
Port Ewan.
Oh, Port Ewan. It said Fort Uni. So you're on. Hi, Bob.
Actually, I'm rather pleased I'm fairly late in the show here because I've got a couple of other comments here besides my question. Number one, if you want to identify the Esopus Meadows a little further, it's by the Esopus Lighthouse.
Okay.
And also a bit about hummingbird feeders almost empty. That might possibly be also a result of night moths. I understand if you want to attract a big night moth, saucer of the mildly fermented fruit juice will attract them at night. And then just have the light you can turn on and off every so often.
Interesting.
And the moth will be there. Okay, at one of the earlier shows there, you mentioned bird houses for bluebirds. We put one up, and we finally got a bluebird this year. Unfortunately, the nesting wasn't successful. The young one died still in the nest. I cleaned out the birdhouse. I thought they might come back for another round, but they didn't.
Yeah.
You mentioned that it was a good idea to put up two bluebird nests relatively close to each other. Is that correct?
Well, that's recommended, mainly to keep the tree swallows and bluebirds at bay.
Mm.
They make good neighbors. However, they have to share the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
So two boxes will accommodate each of them.
There you go.
Roughly how far apart?
They could be back to back.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah, really? Yeah.
Same post.
What about three or four? Would that be good?
No.
Just two?
Two.
Okay.
Okay, it should be in an open area, I gather. In the sun or in the shade?
Doesn't matter. Sun is probably better, only because it probably is more open.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Thank you very much. It's a great show so far.
Well,
hey,
thanks
Bob,
very
thanks
much,
a
Bob.
Lot. We still have time to screw it up. Let's go to Susan now. Now it's Susan's turn in Niskayuna. You're on.
I'm still here.
Hello.
We're being terrorized by three or four red-tailed hawks.
Ooh.
And it looks to me like there are immature ones and mature ones. And I'm noticing the mature ones will be catching chipmunks and feeding the immature ones. It's like college students that don't leave home.
Yeah, that's what's happening.
I'm wondering now, where do they nest? What kind of environment do they like to nest in? And these guys are not shy. I mean, they will sit on my fence maybe 5 feet from me when I'm sitting in the backyard.
Well, let me just say, first of all, they will nest in a wooded area or high in a tree. A large tree, sometimes right at the edge of the woods, or if there's a suitable tree in an open field, like that oak tree, that shade oak that's out in the field, they will nest in that. So this year seems to be, I'm glad you brought that up, because anecdotally anyway, I've been noticing a lot of young red-tailed hawks this year, two by two, and they've been going through some fairly rough times lately, so I think they're having a happy time.
So that's
time.
Good.
Yeah, well, it's good for red-tailed hawks.
Oh, that's good.
Not if you're
they're getting plenty of feed here because we just have tons of chipmunks, baby rabbits.
Mm, delicious.
Yeah, and that's what brings it on. You know, the food is the factor. Good food,
okay.
Good year.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for the call. You know, it's funny. Susan mentions the plethora of red-tailed hawks.
Mm-hmm.
This email from Robert in the town of Wright, northern Schoharie, says two things. And I'll get to the hawks in a moment. First thing, is sunset the natural switching time for swallows and bats? It seems almost unnatural, the transition we see each night.
Yeah.
Okay. Second, it seems turkey vultures are more prevalent this year than our usual red-tailed hawks. Is there a natural competition for territory despite differing diets? And that's from Robert.
No.
No? So it's just luck of the draw.
As it is.
Okay.
Turkey vultures may be a little more, especially out there by Wright, more conspicuous this year because they're apt to be in the air longer and longer.
They're amazing birds. Visible. We see a lot of those nowadays.
I love them.
Let's go to Matt and Rensselaer. Matt, you're on.
Hi, I got a nuisance bird that I'm hoping you guys might be able to identify for me and maybe give me a little advice. This bird is kind of terrorizing my cat.
Oh,
I have an outdoor cat.
Uh-oh.
And it's basically, it'll hover above it if it sees it, and it'll kind of like dive down at it and try to peck at my cat.
Yep.
So my cats are staying underneath the tables and everything. It's
an
average-sized bird, a small bird, and it's gray with a darker wing and a white tail.
Okay, easy pickings. What you got there is the good guy bird of the neighborhood who's taking it on to police the corner. And this is the mockingbird. This is what you have.
It is a mockingbird.
A mockingbird. And they're known for their aggressive behavior like that. They will go after a outdoor cat.
Huh.
For good reason.
Yeah, I was wondering if my cat did something to them or like personally or something like that. Is there any way to get this bird out of my hair?
Yeah, bring the cat inside.
Oh, I knew he was going to say that.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that, yeah.
Well, what can I tell you? I mean, the bird is doing his thing. He belongs out there.
Well, cats,
they don't.
Oh, Rich. All right, Matt, thank you. We're going to have an argument off the air here. Thank you very much. Quickly, let's go to Mike in Bloomingburg. Mike.
Hey, how's it going, Rich?
All right.
Great show. I'm in Bloomingburg, just in Orange County, New York, just over the Sullivan County line. We are overrun with those red-tailed hawks this year.
Wow.
And you were right, as you were talking about before, we have them big enough to lift an eight-pound cat and take it up in the air.
Wow. That's a lot, even for a red-tailed hawk.
I'm in the Catskill region, and they're big. They're really big.
Have you seen them pick up an eight-pound cat, or do you just suggest that they might be able to?
I've heard stories in this area of people who've had their small cats taken up in the air.
Holy mackerel.
Okay, bottom line is cats indoors. Save the cats. I love
really
cats.
Big.
I really do.
To get to the point, every now and then, usually just before the fall, I get this funny-looking bird. It's multicolored, and it looks like almost like a grouse or something. It makes this funny, kind of all these funny sounds, wiggles its wings really weird, and it goes straight up in the air, does this dance, and comes straight down and does this all over again. Now, a friend told me that it might be something called a timber doodle.
A timber doodle. Yeah, that's
timber
a real
doodle?
That's a real name.
Oh, come on.
It is. Continue.
Is there such thing as a timber doodle?
The answer is yes. And now, but that's a colloquial name, and who knows who made it up?
Hanna-Barbera, perhaps.
It came along, but it's actually, you know what? It's a sandpiper related to the snipe, and they live in the woods.
Okay.
And they do this marvelous dance and then aerial acrobatic flight. It's,
yes. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen.
Well, it happens in April. And right into May and perhaps the early part of June. And it's something, if you haven't seen it, put it on your list. Because the trick is to go out to a bottom where the alders and the willows are growing and there's a grassy patch open, a pasture area. And just watch for these guys to show up and then sit back and enjoy the show.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. And we only have about 30 seconds here for Jim in Albany. Jim, you got 30 seconds, my friend.
I wonder if Rich heard of a positive sighting of a golden eagle last summer up near Mr. Van Skyke Island and Waterford.
A positive golden eagle sighting?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll put it on eBird and we'll have a look at it.
Did you see it, Jim?
Last summer, I would ride my bike up the bike path there, and I saw it flying off of Van Skyke Island. And once I was up at the park across from the Waterford Wharf.
Okay.
And I saw it in the tree up there, 25 yards away, 50 feet up, and it was larger than a bald eagle, and it had, I wouldn't say a stripe, but a golden hue on its side.
Okay.
Is that positive identification?
Not yet, but here's what we can do. eBird.org is the place to enter that sort of information. Anybody can do it. eBird.org.
Okay, well, I'm not online. I'm not online, so you have to do it for me, but it was last summer.
All right.
And I used to see bald eagles up there all the time.
Okay, you can always go to the library and do it.
Yeah, a library or a friend or a resource. Yeah. But aside from that, I couldn't really evaluate what it was there at this time.
Well, thanks a lot for the call, Jim. You'll be the last one. Rich Guthrie, what's that email address again?
Richard P. Guthrie, G-U-T-H-R-I-E, at gmail.com.
So RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. What an exciting program today.
Hey. We could keep on going.
We're going to find out about that football-sized hummingbird. You're going to report back next show?
You betcha. It'll be in the front page.
All right. Thanks, Rich. We appreciate it. Support comes from Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. For 14 years, offering plant spirit medicine and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit. ClarePearson.net. The Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available, skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. And the Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, Sunday, 12 to 5, HydeCollection.org. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for being with us. Thank you for listening. Thanks for all the great calls. Thanks to Zachary T. Malloy, our engineer, Xenia Reifenheiser for answering the phones, our producer, the amazing Jessica Blaustein Marshall. And, you know, when she gets the date right, it's really quite a show. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's the Science Forum. Stay tuned now for news.